Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Hello and welcome into the Six Again podcast. This is going to be a big one. We do have a special guest who we'll introduce in just a moment. Jared is with me. How have we settled down after the end of our last episode that we finished so amicably?
I still fucking hate you. You're so stupid.
And on that, you'll see why I'm always... No, not always. I'm not going to claim always. Mostly correct. Anyway, I'm Never. Adam, the Seagulls supporter. That's Jared, the Knights supporter. And we're both out of the finals. So is our guest, actually. But he's not a player from your favourite team, but he is a player from your favourite Australian brewery. We do have Benny Taylor here.
That was so bad.
Wasn't it so good? I loved it. We have Benny Taylor here from Hop Nation. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, good. Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me on finally. Pleased to get a spot and you know, speak to the demise of my lowly Broncos. But thankfully, we've got plenty of good beer chat to brighten our spirits.
I was going to bring in, like, yes, Broncos fans. So the three of us plus Wall. There's now four people over the last couple of weeks who all aren't in finals. So we all know our clubs are doing something wrong. Probably the same thing. But we've mentioned Benny Taylor, I know, countless times on the show. And he's a good mate of ours and has one of the best jobs in the world. So why don't you give us a quick rundown? What's your role in Hop Nation and an update on our prize packs for our first and second place members in the tipping competition, also our first place winner of the street competition?
Yeah, cool. So I'm the head of Queensland sales for Hop Nation Brewing down in Footscray. So a Melbourne-based brewery. Yep, I look after the Queensland territory. I've been a rep for 8 years total and only ever worked for one other brewery prior to that down in the Mornington Peninsula. So, yeah, the Hop Nation crew are just one of the best beer families I've ever been a part of. You know, we do a little, some of you may be aware, we do a little bit of everything in the beer space, sort of really made our name for ourselves on more hop-driven style IPAs and beers of that nature. Having said that, our owners are former winemakers as well. So we do have a wine brand. We also have a gin brand. And with that viticulture pedigree comes a bit of experimentation. We do a lot of barrel-aged beers and wild fermented sours. So yeah, play around with a lot of different genres of beer. Thankfully we're keeping it fairly simple with our prize pack. So, you know, obviously we want to please the masses for the would-be prize getters. So I'll have a nice little mix of, you know, some of our award-winning pale ales and lagers. You know, we'll mix it up a little bit with some of our other intermediate styles. But yeah, it's looking like a pretty schmick little swag that we've got there between the beers that are available. Plus, we've got a nice bunch of merch there between t-shirts and socks and beanies, branded glassware as well. So the boys, Adam and Jared, will have some content updates there on their social pages. So listeners, do check out that when you get a chance, probably in the next 24 hours or so, and you'll see what's up for grabs. So, we're, as Adam sort of alluded to on the last show, the last pod, that nobody's going to catch Ben Liner in the street competition. So big That's congratulations right. to you, Ben. You are the winner of Hop Nation Tipping Comp Street Competition. So what we've got for you, mate, is a couple of four packs of beer. So I'll put that together. I'll, you know, collect this with Adam as far as getting this all shipped to you. You get a pair of socks, you get a pot glass and a beanie too, mate. So congrats once again. That's a top effort in obviously a very unpredictable game there. So yeah, hats off to you.
And confirm the socks and the beanie are awesome.
Yeah, they look really cool.
And why I'm not in the specific of the beer making and stuff, I'm very good at drinking it. And the Hop Nation beer, man, awesome. It's so good. Everything you try is on point. Everything, it's amazing.
I'm glad he came back at the end of Pale Ale and Lager. I'm like, I swear you've scared off probably like three quarters of the listeners. But it is awesome beer. I'm looking at that. So Benny, you'll also grab a I almost said Hop Nation, you'll also grab a 6EN either short or long sleeve shirt, as well as a stubby cooler to go along with your beer, socks, pot glass and beanie, right in time for summer. And our overall tipping comp will be walking out with a slab of beer, socks, pot glass, beanie and a t-shirt from Hop Nation, as well as the shirt and stubby cooler from us. Second place will have 2 4-packs of beer, socks and the same from 6EN, and third place will get the shirt and stubby cooler from 6EN. So there is a lot of merch coming the way of 4 different people, and really excited about that. Before we crack into the show,
Benny, why are Broncos so shit then?
I was gonna say, you're a Broncos supporter. We gave our grades for the Broncos, I think, 2 pods back. I gave them a C because they still finished above where I expected them to. Pretty disappointing finish to the season after a pretty exciting start. As a lifelong Broncos supporter, how's the season been for you?
Yeah, I guess a roller coaster, right? To be honest, I think, pre-season, the addition of Reynolds and Capewell, I thought, we'll be pushing the 8 this year. So I had them penciled in 7th or 8th, I thought was definitely realistic. And obviously 3/4 of the way in the season, it was definitely on the cards. To see that monumental collapse, I mean, you could point to a lot of factors, I guess, but at the end of the day, like you just saw, and Darren harps about this constantly, and he's 100% right, that change in attitude was immense, and obviously in the wrong direction.
I don't harp.
Oh mate, it's almost verbatim from you, but it just, I think there were signs early that there were chinks as well. Like obviously there was a bit of rust for Reynolds coming off injury to start the season. And, we dropped those few games early that you just can't drop if you're trying to push for finals. Knocked off a few big dogs along the way as well, albeit they probably weren't, singing in their own form. So, I think C is probably fair. It's a mild pass, I guess. I guess pressure's on Kevy, right? Like it just looks like they need to find that swag again. And there's a few changes in the lineup that probably dictated things a little. The loss of Carrigan was massive. We don't need to go back over that. Poor bugger, what a scapegoat and whipping boy he ended up being. But it's just they're going to need to find that mojo again, because you can't start slow in this competition, as we've seen over the years. It's like Canberra managed to do it, I guess, and hats off to them. They came home with a wet sail, and no surprises, it was with the addition of Jamal Fogarty, right, back in there. So, that's where I'm at with the Bronx. I think there's optimism, obviously. The attack should really start to get a bit more flair with the addition of Reece Walsh. But it's got to be shearing up things defensively again, because when we were looking good and we were still putting on points, our defense had that, they were up and jamming, they weren't making it easy for anyone, and that's when we looked our best. So big job for the coaching staff ahead to get them back into that mindset.
Pretty solid wrap up there, I reckon. All right, let's get into the show. Benny's going to stick around, and we are going to be kicking off with some World Cup news. So the first 2 full squads have been named, and this is for the physical disability rugby league part of the World Cup. So Australia and New Zealand have finalised their squads to play in Warrington from October 23 to October 30. So Adam Hills would be the most well-known personality from the Australian team, the previous host of Spicks and Specks, and does a lot in the world of rugby league over in England. And he's obviously part of the Australian team. So both full teams are up on the NRL.com website. Wales and England's teams are still to come. And Australia kicks off their World Cup campaign against England at 4:30 on the 23rd of October. Moving on from that, we have Australia and New Zealand have both started naming their squads. So this is going to continue to happen as teams drop out of the finals race. But so far, Australia's World Cup train-on squad has players from the Bulldogs, Dragons, Titans, Storm, Roosters, Seagulls, and Broncos. No real surprises. No surprises at all, really. Burton, Adokar, Ben Hunt, Fifita, Grant, Munster, Suwali, Tedesco, Crichton, Collins, Cherry Evans, Trebojevic, Carrigan, Huss. Pretty much all State of Origin players this year, bar Adokar and Suwali, all those in the squad. Any surprises there from you guys? I'm talking about the people that have been named. All makes sense to me.
Yeah, legit. I'm a bit disappointed that Kurt Mann didn't get named.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like, none of the Newcastle boys got named, but I feel like he's the most... Yeah, I can't even finish that sentence, to
divisive.
Be fair. he's fucking
Jared,
shit.
Jared, do you think if Ponga was healthy and declared himself available, would he have got a spot anyway?
Yeah, I reckon he would.
Maybe off the bench, utility, or...?
No, look, there's... They've got to play a lot of cup games. Obviously, they're going to have Teddy, Luttrell. I feel like they would have brought three, and Luttrell's in the best team to play centre with Teddy at fullback. So I'm guessing they would have brought Ponga on at one point. He's a player in the team who could just rip apart a few other teams. Like, he'd be useful in the cup games just to bring on and just, you know, get some points. I reckon he would have got picked.
Yeah, I guess based more on his rep sort of games and form this year, right, over club.
Look, it's difference when you have good players around you.
You watch the Newcastle games he did play. Like, they probably half of the points Newcastle scored all year could be attributed to him.
Yeah,
to be honest, like, despite the fact that he played so much better with people around him, he did have a crack for Newcastle. It's just that. There's no support for the poor bastard.
I think it's interesting. The only team that's won anything this year in the Tigers have no representatives, so there could be some surprises there. Some upset supporters there, sorry, I should have said.
I wouldn't have been mad if a few of them got picked.
Ofengawi had a quite solid year.
He's Kiwi,
dude. Joe Ofengawi. Isn't he Maroons? No, he's a Maroons.
Yeah, but what does that matter these days?
Yeah, true. New Zealand, I'm not going to read out the entire list because they've announced an entire 34-man squad. It's a very strong-looking team, and right when I say that is obviously when I've exited out by
accident. Yeah, so Sean Johnson got recalled, and they've got Jerome Hughes in the halves with Cody Nikorima in as backup. So there's not that much depth in the halves there. But I was surprised Foran didn't get, to be honest.
Now, Kieran Foran's in there.
Is he?
Yeah.
Cool, don't listen to me then.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I said, it's 34. They've covered like pretty much, that's what, two entire teams of 17 they're taking with them. So I'm just having to look through any bolters here. Braden Hamanuele, I think that's some.
That's well deserved.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. Sebastian Chris as well, after a very strong season, especially the second half. Jeremy Marshall-King, although from memory, he's been in the squad before. Tamari Martin, Griffin Neame from the Cowboys. Awesome to see him in there. The widest Kiwi out.
The bloke on the planet.
Yes. In the worst team as well for his skin like his. Matt Smoko as well from the Raiders. Scott Sorensen from the Panthers. So players that are more than likely going to be there, thereabouts, but more likely your fringe and your rotational players. Charles Nicol Cookstar has been named despite a very stop-start season. Outside of that, all the regulars are there. Yeah, cool. That's a pretty strong-looking side. They're going to have a lot of mobility and power in the forwards and a lot of skill and speed in the backs, but as it's been shown with New Zealand over a number of years, the halves depth, and I agree with Jared there, will be tested once you go past Hughes and Dylan Brown. You'd assume will be the starting pair.
I wouldn't mind Jerome Hughes and Sean Johnson. I reckon that's the strong.
Because imagine Sean Dylan Johnson Brown, and Kieran Foran. Yeah, old school. But
like, Dylan Brown's in a successful team. I haven't really rated his season that high. He hasn't done too much for the Parramatta.
He looked pretty good in the Tonga game, though.
Yeah.
He looked good in the game.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm just saying that I don't think he's their strongest option there, to be honest.
I
would rather Johnson, and because Jerome Hughes, he's a walk-in. He's definitely going to be the halfback. Yeah. He's the best halfback in that squad. I wouldn't mind Hughes and Johnson there.
Is Johnson just facilitator these days, though? Like, he doesn't really challenge the line that much anymore. I mean, I watched a bit of him this season, and, you know, like you guys saw too, he was off the pace quite a bit. He was so up and down.
I think he could be a lot like Ponga. If you put him around some decent players, he could do all right.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Like he showed at Cronulla, right? So
yes. We're going to stick with World Cup. And I don't know if you guys saw this. This is a negative story, I think, where certain people in power have kind of used it to their advantage. So there was a bit of a... On the last NRL 360, they were talking about the Fox Sports having exclusive rights to all 61 games and watch us. We've got all the games in the same segment laughing about some of the teams that actually have qualified for the World Cup. And a watcher of the show and a fan of rugby league commented about how you can go from the extreme of we're the exclusive rights holder for rugby league and then at the same time laugh about why certain countries are actually even included in the World Cup. Someone then tweeted about it and said, how can you have both sides? And then Braith and Astor went on a bit of a, let's say turned it into a bit of a running joke on the panel. Did you guys see this story? To me, the upside is Jamaica's being, they were talking about Jamaica making the World Cup final as a joke, but I'm also laughing about their place in the World Cup despite them not having a rugby league field in the whole of Jamaica. The upside for this is Jamaica's been talked about, and I'm sure a lot of people have then gone and had a look at their jersey on chasingroos.com, and you should, because it's awesome. But is this maybe the best sort of publicity we want our quote unquote big media personalities putting out there?
Yeah. Everyone knows what I think of NRL 360. So obviously they got called out for doing something wrong. And the one time they get called out, not the one time. Brayford asked him, you know, he's like, oh, guys, it was just a laugh. You know what I mean? Like, it was just.
Yeah, it's not a good look, right?
Like, I fucking hate it.
If you're genuinely trying to grow the game into other markets, into other nations, this is not the way to go about it. Like having just a bit of tongue in cheek, but I mean, that's still coverage for a nation that, who knows, like that's untapped market potentially down the track. Like, but if you give them the wrong impression right from the get-go, then what chance do you really have? So I guess, a little bit of lack of professionalism, I guess, at the end of the day, which, why are we not surprised?
I'm not surprised at all. Like you say, tongue in cheek, bloody Jamaica bobsledding 1988. That's tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And they proved the world wrong. It'd be awesome.
That's what I mean. If the best outcome could be, this is some motivation, and they might.
I can't wait to see the TV ratings for Jamaica's first game. It's gonna be brilliant.
The NRL 360 crew just, as Ben said, ridiculously unprofessional. Like,
I don't really think they can be on their high horse either, that Australia last performed in a big international comp.
And they get so much wrong, but they never retract anything, do they? Like, the amount of shit they get wrong and, like, have a go at people and, you know, say this is unprofessional, but then when it's come out that, you know, it's wrong information, they never go, oh, boys, like, they don't retract what they're saying. And
because there is no accountability, right? They're obviously, you know, running the game from a network standpoint, and it just, running everybody.
Yeah, there's no, it's just, they're what's wrong with rugby league. That's all it comes down to. They're exactly what's wrong with rugby league, and I think they can say anything without any repercussions.
That's it. Let's move.
Without getting too far off topic, I heard a quote from Gus the other night. Might have been on 100% footy or something. And it was one that resonated with me. And I'm keen to get your take on this because
he's throwing something on us.
fierce defender of referee, blah, blah, blah. Gus's words around, I think it was just responding to, yeah, the Sin Benathon. You guys covered it pretty well last time. You know, not so much who's to blame, but what were the extenuating circumstances that led to it. But the one that stood out to me, and I rarely agree or take, you know, put much stock in what Gus says anyway, but he said oversensitive officiating crew, and I couldn't agree more. To the point where it's got nothing to do with their character. It's just the way these officials are adjudicating, and I get that it's in their DNA. They're, you know, not so much power hungry, but they're, you know, so authoritarian and lack that feel for the game. It's like they're just looking at a set of criteria, and that's what they're adjudicating to. There's no feel. And I know we've seen it go the other way
right now, Ben.
Aaron's very black and white.
We've seen it go the other way, obviously, the wrong way with, you know, Henry P, for instance. It was great, ex-player in there, but he just did not handle situations very well, right, as a ref. So, I don't know. Is Gus overstepping?
Ben jumps on the podcast for the first time and throws a grenade in the middle of me and Adam. Fantastic.
I just muted Jared for that one.
My question is, did Gus overstep with that statement that it's an oversensitive officiating crew?
I'm just trying.
And that's league wide, I feel. Okay, actually, I feel that you're probably aiming that to what's supposed to be the upper echelon of officials.
That's actually what I was going to say. It's not, I wouldn't say it's the referees, the directive that's coming down from the NRL because they're trying to prevent all these head injuries. And that's been my point all along. It's not the referees are doing this. Like, it kind of always also leans into the whole uproar the last couple of days about the players and the coaches coming out and saying, we don't take dives. Latrell Mitchell was getting hit in the head, sat up, looked at the referee and was like, I'm not playing the ball until you blow something here, dude. Like, that was happening. So,
He gave away the penalty, fully expecting to be able to challenge
something. Yeah.
It's like, that's the happening side of it, but you just got to let the game flow too, man.
Yeah. So the players have to take some responsibility for this as well. And they know if there's any replay chopped in the head, they've got the referees have a directive coming down going, this needs to be penalized to prevent the concussions, that shows the world that the NRL are actively doing anything to prevent players in 20 years suing them for concussions and trying to put everything in place. And that's the whole reason for it. As far as the referees being overly sensitive to that kind of stuff, like if you watch a referee come through 16s, jersey flag, Q cup and stuff like that, they're not like that until they hit the NRL because of the directive from the NRL coming down. Like
The NRLW refereeing is so much better for an example.
But that's the point. There's less technology coming out of it. There's less scrutiny on a high tackle.
I get that they want to keep their job. I get that. They tell them, obviously they get the directives from Ansley or other league officials as far as
I think it's a Gerard. It's one of the brothers who's a head of referees, I think.
Yeah. I feel like there needs to be coaching the other way as well. It's like, don't just coach to a ref to a criteria. Ref some field, and you know, if they're lacking that, if that's not part of, you know, what their natural ability to ref is, it could probably be coached into it.
Well, see, the problem with refing to feel is that there's a big word in the NRL called consistency, and if you're refereeing to feel and let the exact same situation go one week and then ping it the next week, how much does that get replayed on NRL 360
could it be any worse than, say, playing the ball with your foot when they were pulled up for doing it in the first 3 weeks?
I understand. I fully get it.
But the problem is
that if you referee for feel and let one go, and then 2 weeks later someone's replaying the vision, and then you got Ricky Stewart abusing the shit out of you in a press conference saying, 2 weeks ago I got pinged for that and now I got let go. Where's the consistency?
That's the only way
to get rid of that. The only way to get rid of that conversation is to referee to black and white. Unfortunately, that's the only way to do it. With the amount of cameras around, you can't. You got to referee the same thing week in, week out. Unfortunately, I know Adam's like, "Oh, release the rules." In what part of the world, in any situation, are they releasing any rules, or are they just making more? There's no part of the world that the world has gone, "Oh, you know what? Let's just relax laws today." You know,
they can. Oh no,
there's no society, no part of society that's relaxing on.
I know, and look how society's going.
Here's a I'm scenario. Happy. If that was an Origin game, what?
Oh, duh!
Would there have been 7 sin bins in an Origin game?
I hope so.
You know,
I reckon they should referee the same as a finals, Origin, and a regular NRL game. That needs to happen. That's what I said. And that excludes your conversation of asking if it's an Origin game. Have you got a drink of water and a beer either side of your laptop?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, that's my boy. Gotta get up early tomorrow.
We've only got a couple of minutes on this one. I think both sides have a point in this. But I think one thing, the bottom line that the black and white thing doesn't work for and the field thing doesn't work for, there's got to be a blend of both, because sport's only successful because it's not perfect. If it was black and white and everything was exactly the same every game, no one would watch it. Because you know it's going to happen. Can I ask
you a question on that, though?
No, because it's the best reality TV show in the world.
There is, sport. But for some reason, and you have an expectation that the sport, you acknowledge that sport's not perfect, but you don't let referees not be perfect.
No, you said last week I'm introducing grey area. That's the
non-perfection. You always are.
With the black and white.
But then you'll complain about the referees because this is...
No, I complain when there's a extreme example or a howl, like your DRS in cricket. It was brought in to get rid of the howlers, but it's been manipulated by both teams to waste time, get inside the opponent's heads. Well, that might be out. Let's have a chance, like the captain's challenge, which is crap. If it's a howler, sweet. That's what the extent of the refereeing or the officiating's for. If it's the little stuff in between, that's the imperfection of the game. That's why people, that's some of the most...
But how do you adjudicate they're not doing it for howlers and doing it for little things, though?
Because howlers are the obvious ones, mate.
Yeah, but how do you adjudicate? The player might see it as an obvious decision in their fit of emotion compared to the actual decision.
Last week, the biggest concern was the amount of time players spent off the field for calls that would usually be penalties that were turned into sin bins because of the occasion.
But like I said,
that was it. If that was a regular season game, there might have been 2 sin bins out of those 7.
Not magic round. But like I said,
occasion.
He let one off. He let one off, and 2 tackles later, the same bloke done a high tackle again. Mm-hmm. So from what you're saying, the players can't control themselves still and still do high tackles. Like, it's just, there's nothing right here.
let's move on, eh? So, something that's...
Gallon beat Panner. I know everyone's
going to see that tomorrow. This isn't a boxing show, mate. Unlike Fox League. Let's go on to... There's nothing worth watching on there, except for some of the games. Let's have a look. There's an NRL footy fest that no one's even talking about, but it's actually really cheap, and you get to watch, I think, 4 games. So this is on the 25th of September, which is only 10 days away, but it'll be both NRLW semifinals, followed by the men's and women's Prime Minister 13s taking on Papua New Guinea. So 4 games back to back to back to back, all at Suncorp Stadium. And I believe the most expensive tickets are adults for $50 in the gold section, which are usually like your $100-something Broncos tickets. You'll be able to see both NRLW semifinals plus the Prime Minister's selections, men and women's teams taking on the Kumuls down at Suncorp. So I'm already looking at going, so it's like $50 and it'll be sick. Talking about Suncorp, Dolphins have confirmed their venue structure for 2023. Now, a lot of teams, if you're a supporter of a team at a major stadium, you are not going to be playing out of that stadium for the whole of 2023, just so you know, because there's a bigger thing on called the FIFA Football World Cup. Well, the women's
I don't agree World with that Cup. Statement at all.
Oh, it's much bigger, Jared. Get over it. So they're kicking the NRL and the AFL and everyone else basically out of the stadiums because they need them. So Broncos will be playing, I believe, 3 games at the Gather next year for the first time since the 1960s. The Dolphins will be playing 3 games guaranteed to start the to finish the season at Morton Daly. They will be kicking off their season, though, at Suncorp, not against the Broncos. They're trying to line up against the Roosters for a new cup that will be called the Arthur Beetson Cup. But the Dolphins will be playing 7 games out of the out of Suncorp, 5 games out of Morton Daly Stadium. And what else was there on that? Hell, I don't know. But yes, Broncos will be playing at the Gabba. So if you're a supporter of the Roosters, the Rabbits, anyone who plays out of Bankwest or what's the big one called at the moment? Accor Stadium. Have a look at your fixtures for next year as they start to come out. And I'm actually kind of excited to see where some of these games are going to get moved to. Broncos at the Gabba, Benny. 36,000.
Yeah, that could be cool. I obviously never saw it the last it happened. So,
nope. You know what the cool thing about that?
20 years before we were born.
I guess all we hope is a bit of winning culture at that ground rubs off, right? The Lions are going all right. So,
you know what the good thing about that is?
They are
across the road, you got a few breweries from the Gabba, but you got the German bar across the road from the Gabba. Oh,
yeah. I'd say. It's a bit of an institution for Hop Nation. So a quick plug there for anyone who gets along to the German Club's Oktoberfest. We've brewed the German Club a Oktoberfest beer to be showcased over the 2 weekends. So we're starting on October 7th and they run that weekend into and then they'll reload and go again for the following weekend. So massive time for the German Club, obviously. And stoked to be in partnership with those guys on this beer.
Hell of a pub, looks after us very well during the Gabba test every year. So looking forward to it.
Absolute institution of the Gabba.
Yeah.
Just on the Dolphins before we move on as well. So they have confirmed that their opening trial match, the first time the team will play as a match, is set to be held in Central Queensland at Brown Park in Rockhampton. So this is part of the agreement that's seen the Central Queensland Capras, the affiliate club for the Dolphins. And the agreement means one trial per year will be played in Rockhampton. Coincidence or not, who knows? Since that agreement has been put in place as part of the Dolphins' bid, the Capras, who were wooden spooners last year, actually end up finishing 5th on the table this year. Coincidence? We'll see. So that is cool.
It's both not.
I don't know enough of their players yet to be able to
it's not.
Talk about that. What do you reckon it is, Jared?
I think they got 12 new players in their top 30.
There we go.
We're doing it.
Sorry, I said 60. No, it's been 67 years, not in the 60s. It's been 1956 when Australia played New Zealand at the Gabba. That was the last rugby league fixture. Same year as the Melbourne Olympic. Wow, that is a long time ago. All right, so did you guys hear about Tom Dearden's record-breaking effort against the Cronulla Sharks?
Rody tried to get his nut cut off to play.
Or, most meters run with one ball.
Very close. Very close. Most meters covered by a rugby league player in a match in record.
So he's in doing history. Marathons.
So there you go. So if you have two balls, you can double it. Huh?
Oh, well, without the ball in his hand.
No, just like how the amount of distance he covered in that game.
Who gives a shit? He could have just done laps after the game.
What do you mean?
What was the number?
11.34 kilometers, so 11,344 meters in game time, covered by a half, which we know is not a one side of the field half, and you couldn't be that with those sort of numbers. That is an insane distance to cover, especially. Oh my gosh, that beats. Wow, Chad Townsend is second, 11.2. That's crazy.
it's still not, it doesn't like even come close to what the Aussie rules midfielders
do. No way. No way.
They're running half marathons every game.
Yes.
If I turn my head, my 10-month-old daughter is that far away every fucking time for 30 seconds. So not impressive.
Oh, that's so impressive. I ran 2Ks on a treadmill today and I was like sweating.
Yeah, no, Ali's just gone. She's 12Ks away in 30 seconds if I turn my head. Fucking hell.
Hey, he did it on one nut, man. Come on. He literally bust the nut to run that far. It was nuts. Oh, so I'm just going to stop now. Caitlin Moran, or Moran, sorry, I should say.
I was about to tee off.
As I should. So if you haven't heard, the Queen passed away this week. People pass away each day.
But David Chair Evans passed away.
No, the Queen. Oh, very good. I like that. I like that. Royalty. Thank you very much. So she said something
inbred,
maybe in the not best taste, we'll say. We're not going to repeat it. Nothing illegal about it. As an Indigenous woman, owes nothing to the monarchy if you've followed that part of Australian history. And let's just say probably said what, I'm not going to say a minority, but a lot of people have thought of that certain family. And the NRL came down with a very heavy penalty for something that, on the grand scheme of things, seems quite insignificant. She was fined 25% of her salary, suspended, but also a match. And the Rugby League's Player Association, headed by Clint Newton, is not very happy with that and has questioned the NRL whether they would impose such a ban on one of her male counterparts. So just to put that in retrospect, if we took Kalyn Ponga as the most, high-profile Newcastle Knights player, it would have cost him $250,000 and 5 games, or basically a fifth of the season. NRL's not doing that any day of the week. So why such a big fine for a woman player, especially when they're trying to grow the game? Is it a don't say anything nasty about the royal family, or is it a use social media properly, like posting assault charges or footage?
I think it's trying to stamp out any kind of developing bad habits early, I guess, from players, just setting a precedent as far as, all right, if you're going to, I definitely agree that it's way too harsh a penalty and what have you for, what's generally a minor indiscretion. You know, take it however you will. People can have their opinions, what have you. But it definitely feels like a bit of a line in the sand to me. And I couldn't think of anything else to rationalise why you hand out such a heavy penalty like that.
I'd be able to get that sentiment if they showed the same thing in the NRL. And I know it's been a while since, let's say, a player did something new. But you look at the suspension of suspensions to next season and players literally being charged with assault and still being able to play. And you had a look at Brett Finch literally being charged with eliciting child pornography. And when that was first coming around, there was nothing put down by the NRL apart from please don't be on our TV shows anymore. And then you have Ray Hadley's comment saying it's the most reprehensible thing he's ever seen connected to rugby league. He obviously hasn't been watching it the last couple of years. Anything from you as a Knights supporter, Jared, after the Newcastle Knights supported the NRL stance and will be working with Caitlin over the next 12 months through educational and behaviour, restoration programs? Oof.
Social media posts deserve to be if she repeatedly done it, like there's a very stark, like a behavior of it.
Yeah, pattern of behavior.
But social media posts, she could have been drunk. Who's posted something funny something stupid while they're drunk on Facebook or Instagram or whatever? She you know, could have been having a really bad day or anything like that. Like one social media, my point is one social media post is not worth this level of scrutiny and punishment at all. It's just because what social media posts take about for most people these days on Instagram, about 10 seconds to do 150 words or whatever it is. Like it's a 10 seconds lapse of something she obviously feels pretty heavy about, but in retrospect, she probably understands it was the wrong thing to do, wrong thing to post as a high profile person. But yeah, you just don't know the situation behind it. And as you said, in the last year alone, NRL players have done way, like the men players have done way worse things. So why weren't they fined? You know, that she comments on the history of the Queen and the monarch and all that kind of stuff. You got, you know, 3 of the 7 Manly players actively supporting a guy convicted for attempted murder on the field. For me, that's a lot worse because he read it on his wrist and then he made a hand signal after he celebrated a try. So for me, that's a lot worse than Sherd tweeting something. And so
a funny thing that's been lost in this is a lot of the people that were ripping into the Manly 7 for doing what they did because it wasn't inclusive are also the same people that are now ripping into Caitlin Moran. You can't have it both ways, guys. Like
for me, what anyone who supported Finau did on physically on the field is one of the worst things I've seen on a football field, to be fair. And this day and age. So the fact that this chick who's, you know, trying to relate a cultural issue, probably in the wrong words, on a tweet is probably not the way the NRL should be going around and focusing on as opposed to a lot of other things.
By doing this, the NRL is really sort of, you know, just dismiss any idea of freedom of speech, right? So, I mean, they're going to make it difficult on themselves if they want to, you know, be able to police to this level of scrutiny what its representatives, be they players, coaches, staff, whatever. You know, they're going to have the, you know, the social media police out monitoring this sort of stuff.
The ultimate test will be what, and I guarantee will happen within the next 6 months to a year, NRL men's player tweeting something fucking dumb. That's going to be the ultimate test, what they're reacting to that.
It's already happening, right? Or, you know, you see it in the States a bit where, you know, all of a sudden someone's about to hit the big time coming out of college or whatever. Someone will be out there on a smear campaign trying to dig up their tweets from their junior year of high school and shit. You know,
didn't it happen to the English cricket team about 18 a year, something like that? Mm-hmm. Like there's an English player selected, and he was like 24 at the time, and someone dug up a tweet for when he was like 18. It was homophobic or something, and he lost.
Yeah,
he stripped of a few game payments or something like that, and like.
We forget as well, like there's a couple of players out of Canberra that were supporting the protest march and stuff in all the capital cities, and they were saying, here's the locations, get out and do it, slap on the wrist. But I think this is the biggest thing the NRL has done here is a huge slap in the face to all the Indigenous work that they do, Indigenous round, Indigenous this.
Yeah,
if you're making this big a deal, making this big a deal, about an Indigenous woman talking about the colonization and the disrespect that her people have endured as part of this monarchy, it shows that they don't actually understand or have educated themselves. This is something that should have been handled behind closed doors, said, we don't understand where you're coming from because we aren't in those shoes, this isn't the best way to go about it, and this is how it makes the game look. You've received a written warning. That's the end of it. That could have all been done behind closed doors without this even becoming thing. And the fact that Channel 9's the one who found it and actually reported it to the NRL shows how much the effort they're going to literally scrape up a story.
On the other hand, I don't know about you guys, but I work for a company that's international. And because it's so big, and you know, in my area, I'm the second in charge, whatever. I'm a pissant compared to compared to the overall company size, you know what I mean? I'm tiny.
Yeah.
My social media regularly gets checked. And anyone who knows my social media, I haven't checked my Facebook profile pictures since I was regularly catfishing, since I was like 21. And so, you know, it's there is on the other hand that this chick, Caitlin, knows that, you know, you say your social media is always getting checked. In other words, like she should be aware.
There's another way. Don't press send. Don't press send.
Fix it behind closed doors. That's it.
That's right. Like she. They could have flagged it. They could have just pulled her in, had a chat with her, done it. But for the start of the thing, she shouldn't have done it. Like that's the unfortunately she believed in it and whatever. But it's ultimately cost her more than probably she was expecting. But unfortunately, and it's also cost her more than we believe should have happened. But unfortunately, you know, you work in this day and age, you got to stay off social media. That's just the
I try to. It's too addictive. I'm sorry. The national. Let's go on a good news story. So the NRLW has announced the nominees for this year's Veronica White Medal, which is the Woman of the Year. Recognise the efforts of an NRLW player who not only excels on the field but dedicated their time off the field to make a positive difference. So it's the fourth instance that this medal has been awarded, and it's in line with the NRLW Premiership, with this year's nominees forming the inaugural NRLW Community Team of the Year. So each nominee receives $1,000 to give back to their junior rugby league club, while the winner will also receive additional prize to give back to junior rugby league and their supporting charity. So on the NRL.com website, you can cast your vote, and the nominees for this year, Jamie Chapman from the Broncos, Steph Hancock from the Titans, Millie Boyle from the Knights, Kennedy Cherrington from the Eels, and Olivia Koenig from the Roosters. So jump on NRL.com and have a read of each of those women's stories, what they're doing off the field, and jump on and be part of it.
You know, my favourite player in the men's competition right now is Adam Elliott. Because without him, we wouldn't have Millie Boyle at Newcastle.
I was waiting for that. Okay, there he is. Another fudger. All right, let's jump on to the final round of the NRLW. So we know from last week that three teams have already locked up their finals positions in the Roosters, the Dragons, and the Knights. However, the other three teams are all fighting out for the final fourth place position. So there is a full breakdown on here, but I want to have a look at the bottom three teams and see who's got the best chance of finishing in that fourth position, who will then obviously play in that footy fest at Suncorp in the two semi-finals. So Broncos currently sit fourth on 2 points, a points differential of minus 21. The best they can finish is fourth. The worst they can finish is last. They looked okay, I guess, at points this season, but nowhere near what they've been in the past and been decimated from losing players to clubs all over the comp. We're having a look at who they've got in the final round. Their best place, let's have a look. One of them's got the Roosters, don't they, to finalise. Oh, man, I just had it here and now I've lost it. Jump in, Jared.
What?
Oh, my God. So I'm just going to have to. All right, sorry about that. Broncos take on Eels. Titans take on Roosters. So Broncos are in the box seat with an easier match, certainly, than the Titans. And Titans have a worse points differential than the Broncos do by 13 points. Eels are currently last on 0 points and technically can still make it if they beat the Broncos by quite a margin and the Titans are belted by the Roosters. So this is one of those kind of everything points towards the Broncos being there, which means they probably won't be. Can the Titans pull off a win against the Roosters, and can the Eels beat the Broncos?
Seems improbable, doesn't it?
It seems improbable, but Broncos dropped from what, third to ninth in what, 5 weeks in the men's comp, and this is all down to one game. That's all right. I'm playing for Jared there. Yeah, stranger things have happened. He's just like having a look at his phone. I thought he was going to research something there.
But I was, but yeah.
I'm interested to see.
Are you having a dad nap,
He's having a daddy nap.
Mate, I got a story to tell you guys.
No, don't need it right now. I wouldn't be surprised if the Roosters rested a couple of players, because even if they do lose to the Titans, the Knights need to make up 50-plus points in for and against, against the Dragons. And I think that's less likely to happen than it is the Titans to beat the Roosters.
Newcastle is going to win grand final anyway, no matter where we come, so it's fine. Hey, when have I ever been able to say that? I love being able to say that. How good.
Yes, they could. They're still...
They'll be close. I know, like, what was it last weekend? Was it 16-14? And Isabel Kelly or someone? No, it wasn't Isabel Kelly. Someone scored a try in the last minute to win the game. Yeah, so, you know, we're up there.
And if it's Roosters versus Knights, it's disgusting either way. So let's go Dragons or Titans. Come on. Yeah, I got Titans beating Roosters this week and still missing because Broncos will beat the Eels. But as a Manly supporter, Eels finishing last is brilliant, but that means that Knights and Roosters will play in the final, which is luckily something we don't see or haven't seen in the men's comp in quite a while.
You wait. Ponga's resting himself on the World Cup this year. We're on next year. You wait, he'll be put a bit of bulk on.
Adam Elliott's going to change everything for you.
You know what? We'll just bring Millie Boyle onto the field.
not the worst. Not the worst idea. Let's shift.
Well, you're losing Clemmer, right? You're losing Clemmer.
It looks like.
Do you know what? We'll swap her for Jack Everington. How's that?
Yeah, I'd rather Millie Boyle.
She's a cool head, that's for sure.
If you are a supporter of teams that have been knocked out already and not likely to be picked for any World Cup squads, have a look at injuries. So Titans have released their first round of off-season surgeries, with Aaron Booth, Patrick Herbert, Aaron Clark and Corey Thompson all going under the knife in the off-season in a bid to be fit for the start of next year. And that rolls us into the casualty ward heading into this week's matches. So talking about Adam Elliott, he has succumbed to a pelvic injury, suffered against the Storm. He'll miss his side's sudden death clash with the Eels on Friday. That's a big loss because they're coming up against a big pack, and while Raiders are a big pack themselves, Elliott offers just that little bit, something a little bit different that Ryan Sutton doesn't bring.
He's got the right amount of mungle in him, doesn't he?
He has
the versatility as well. He's a big out.
He is a big loss.
Fucking funny.
So Corey Harrow and Naira comes into the starting side, and Ryan Sutton's added to the bench for his first game since round 22.
Yeah,
it's not, but we just said Sutton's just straight up and down. Prop forward or middle forward is just going to tackle and get meters. Wrong. He doesn't offer anything outside of that. And against the Eels, you kind of want to be able to move him around a little bit more in the middle, I think, and Sutton's not going to offer that. Corey O'Hara Naira is...
can be that X factor, right?
Just he can be.
What Corey are you getting?
That's it. Is it bench Corey or starting Corey? We'll see. Mitch Moses has been named.
If he gets over, I want to see what level he takes his post-try celebrations, because I think he has some of the best.
Oh, he's so good.
With his little booty pops and his hip. But yeah,
no one's told him that try July's finished.
And Ben's just watching that when he runs his old booty in the right, Ben. It's after the try celebration.
Oh, man, the boy can twerk.
Mitch Moses has been named, so has to overcome concussion protocols. Let's have a look. Rabbitohs head in the semi-final against Cronulla without Tom Burgess, who suffered a head knock and has subsequently copped a 2-game ban for a careless high tackle. So he'll play again if the Rabbits make the grand final.
How much trouble you reckon Brad Arthurs is going to cop it on the chin? Because he's named his son, young Arthur, what can we say? And he's only a specialist half. Like, he can't play anywhere else. He just can't. And there's multiple times this year where he's played like 2 minutes, 1 minute. Yeah, put him on at the end to give when they've already won the game. So if he's walking into a you know, do or die game. And if the halves don't get injured, they're not gonna. He's not gonna put Jacob on. That's his name for the game. Like, he's not gonna put him on because he's proven he won't. So essentially, go into the game with 16 players.
Yeah,
is that silly? Like
Melbourne Storm blueprint, Nico Hines.
Yeah, but Nico Hines can play more than one position. Like, if he,
you're just talking about being on there 16 minutes. He played 0 minutes in a grand final from memory.
Yeah, yeah, but like if anyone in the back line could get would get injured.
No, I see your point, Jared.
Nico Hines could cover, whereas if someone gets injured, I'm pretty sure Ryan Madison is going out to the centres.
No, I think like, it also comes down to if you leave Jacob Arthur out and one of the halves get injured, whoever you put in there is going to offer just as much as Jacob Arthur.
Well, no, I to be honest, I prefer Bryce Cartwright at bloody off the bench.
That's where I was going.
Jared, that's what I just said. Yeah. There wouldn't be any loss to not putting Arthur
in. No, I think Bryce Cartwright's a better half than Jacob Arthur.
That's what I just said.
It appears that that's what's keeping Cartwright out of the 17, right? Would be Jacob Arthur.
Yeah.
What a selection.
We're seeing a similar scenario play out there with Kevy and Billy. You know, it's different, I get, because Billy does offer more versatility, but it's still like there are better options.
Don't leave me out, Dad.
I don't know if they're trying to create that Ivan and Nathan or John and Scott situation. I don't know. Sattler, Clintons. But like, there's more and more coaches with sons in their 17. And this is the one that confuses me the most, to be honest. Like, as you said, the Walters, that at least Billy can play a few positions in a pinch.
I mean, I guess the only thing you could say for Brad to keep, you know, bringing him in was because he's tearing it up in New South Wales Cup, right? Like, and in reserve grade. Like, he's outperforming the quality of competition there. So this is where he's got to have him.
Yeah, but on the other hand, they've got Nathan Brown just sitting there at 600 grand, not doing anything.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot
of... Yeah, but it could be on the...
And their 18th man is...
doing nothing.
And their 18th man is a winger.
Yeah.
So I just don't get fucking power right now. Like, this is make or break potentially a career and just pick the weirdest team you can. I don't know.
They could be playing mind games. There could be late changes, you know.
Well, if they're playing my games, they wouldn't do it every week for the entire year.
I think the go-to, we may as well, that brings us basically to our team list anyway. So we are talking about the first of the two, whatever these are called, semi-finals, finals week two games.
Yeah, yeah. Last week was quarter. This is semi. Next week's prelim.
Yeah. And then there's a final after the prelim. Yeah, anyway, it's a finals game and it's elimination. And then we're in the second week. And it's the Friday night, 7:50 at Combank Stadium. Obviously, Parramatta Eels versus the ever-improving Canberra Raiders. And no need to go over the reserves there for the Eels. For the Raiders, we've already mentioned Adam Elliott and that change. Albert Hopewadi is again the 18th man. Otherwise, the teams are unchanged from their last game. I might look like if everything's sweet with Mitch Moses tomorrow, I see Nathan Brown coming in and Arthur dropping out only to try and match the size that Canberra's going to bring with their forwards. You look at their bench, Emre Guler, Horsburgh, Sutton. Not that Parramatta's is small by any stretch. Niokore, Kafusi and Makatoa. Having another one in there is not going to be the worst thing. Obviously, Canberra have Tom Starling there, who's going to go into dummy half. They rotate him and Zach Wolford. They don't have a backup half. They also don't have halves under injury clouds or concussion clouds. This is going to be... I don't see this one being a low-scoring grind, the way that both teams have been playing. I'm going to wipe that Parramatta game and use Jared's philosophy of them winning this game and then losing next week only to win the grand final the week after. That's how it works. And just take Parramatta on face value. That's just Jared's go-to. Somehow Parramatta's going to win, but they have to lose next week in order to do so. So
I...
Could have been like 28, 24 or something like that.
I've actually gone para on this one for that theory of mine. But on the other hand, I don't like the way go about things. So last week, Ring Stewart came out and said, you know, we showed video of Melbourne Storm to rile the team up, and, you know, the whole NRL hates us and we always get the short straw. That's always a manly thing. Yeah, I know, but they always go in with that bullshit thing that everyone's against them. And I'm sitting there, shut up. Like, no one's against you. Come on.
Jerry. I mean, look, like, if that's what it takes to motivate his team, you know, like, he's well within his rights to do so. Whether it's fact or not, like, if that's what gets him juiced, then he's going to do it.
The problem with that is...
more legal than Cronulla used.
That was starter required, yeah.
The problem with that theory, and that's what I was kind of getting to, is that to play on that emotion takes way more out of you than
it's
playing...
It's a gamble.
Ricky Stewart's always done it. He's been doing it to Cam for the last couple of years. He got him to the grand final a couple of years ago, but they were just wiped out in that grand final. Like, they were so tired. And... they did it against Melbourne. I think last week was their grand final. And they're coming up against the Parra team, who's notorious for getting flogged and flogging the team next week.
Yeah.
They played the best game of the year against Melbourne in Melbourne. They're coming to combat this one with the same mentality that everyone hates us. Wipe my eyes. I've got tears.
Are you thinking ambush or just...
No, I'm thinking Parramatta's going to...
They're not going to hit the same height.
I think Parramatta are going to win this easily.
Yeah, but Parramatta has got a new storyline this year. Have you heard about Brad Arthur's job being on the line?
I'm the one who called it 18 months ago, dude.
Jared, it's sarcasm. It happens every year.
My take is, you know, I'm going to reserve my pick and tip. Obviously, it's, you know, very heavily dependent on this Moses situation with his health. So, you know, if there's a later halves change, nobody wants that in their preparation. So, I think we know where we're going with that. As for Canberra, I watched a bit of this game sort of off and on last week. Me and Al went to the Violent Soho concert. So that's part of our, you know.
I saw that tweet, that message. I was so happy and so depressed at the same time that I don't even think I just gave you a thumbs up.
Did I mention the June Rats came out there for a little cameo as well in the support? Anyway, we had a few beers before the gig, and we, you know, had this game on. And I tell you what, Canberra were definitely up for it, yes, and almost out-Melbourne-ing Melbourne in terms of the flair that they played with as well. Like, obviously, that Tomoko try was freaking epic. If you look at, you know, how much work he had to do and the players that he ran through to get there, you know, if they want to bring that, you know, if they want to fight fire with fire with how the Eels play, like, you give them every chance. But, to your points as well, it's like, this obviously such a thing as being, you know, running your race too early, and that could be the case as well. It'll definitely come down to the packs, right? Like, who's going to win that, you know, that battle in the middle in particular, and give those backs the right to be able to play off the cuff footy and get a bit expansive. So again, I'm reserving my pick until what's happening with Moses. My heart says
I reckon Moses will play.
My heart wants the Raiders to get up, just because, you know, I'm fierce anti bloody Parramatta.
That's my boy.
It would be I think justice for, you know, what sort of team Parramatta are this year to go.
Yeah, you know what's gonna suck? If Parramatta dominate like I'm expecting them to be, everyone's gonna be like, oh, Parramatta are back, they're a threat again, and I'll be sitting there just like,
yeah, well, I mean,
they're shit.
It's obvious for them to capitulate in the you know, the preliminary. So,
but on the other hand, if Parramatta do lose this game, I've been right for the last 2 years. So either way,
talking about that. You know who else has been right? Everyone who said Knights are shit for the last 10 years. There we go.
You have to go low blow there, dude.
To me, it's going to be Adam Elliott out, Mitch Moses in, is such a massive swing. That's all. I agree, Ben. It comes down to whether Moses plays or not. If he plays, it's a, to me, If he plays, it's a majority pick to Parramatta because that's an easy pick. If he doesn't play...
Parramatta will not win.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well. The other interesting thing is...
Do you still like the halves balance better for the Raiders, even if Moses plays anyway?
So on the halves balance, my next point was going to be, I'm interested to see what happens with either team when they get in front, because there's not a player on either side who's a game manager that's done it at this level in the finals. The closest person in the halves would probably be Jamal Fogarty, but he's in new territory. Jack Whiten's not a controller. Brown's not a controller. Moses isn't a controller. Neither of the dummy halves have done it either. The only one in either squad would have been Josh Hodgson. He's obviously not playing. To me, they're both teams who play their worst footy when they put the cue in the rack once they get in front. And
on that note, I think Jack Wine's the one you're going to talk about there because he's done
experience.
The most.
Yes.
Yeah, he's done the most.
But and it's not he's really... The
only, only half in that team he's playing the NRL Grand Final. Only half of this team he's won at Origin. Only half in that team who's got man of the match in Origin. That's so
great. And which of those games has he been the controller?
Well, I think a couple of years ago, it's a sixth for New South Wales, wasn't he?
If you ask if you say, what's Jack Whiten like as a player? I think you'd be searching pretty far and wide to say, he controls the game really well and can shut down games and control tempo.
No, but I think he's the best big game player on that field.
Yeah, it could be.
By far, I'd say.
Greg Inglis was a great big time player as well. I wouldn't give him the ball to control the game.
No, but you're saying all the halves who, he's going to have the biggest output in a big game.
Because Ben's question was, which halves do you believe has the best balance? And my next point was, I'm interested to see which team. Once the team gets in front, how they're going to go about it? Because I'm really sorry to bring this up, Ben, because we were both there. But the 2015 Grand Final, once Broncos got in front, the obvious ploy was kick it out and try and kill time. And
that came from Wayne.
Yeah, and then so I'm going like, if either team gets
Ben
in front, they're going to...
Ben just finished his beer at one goal there. Fucking Adam, why would you bring that up to me?
Well, I'm interested in that because if Canberra get in front, their best chance for me to stay in front is to keep scoring, not to try and defend their way to victory, which is going to keep it open for Parramatta to come back. And I think it's going to work both ways.
I guess if any team's going to be able to grind better, it would be Canberra over Parra. Just in their DNA, I think, particularly with their forwards.
Would that be through defense, though, as opposed to kicking the ball deep, getting repeat sets? It'd be more like, just turn the ball over down defense. There and just try and defend our way.
Fogarty does have a pretty good kicking game. And I guess the balance there with Whiten, if he's going for more distance and kicking early and things like that, when he gets it right, quite often he does them as well and, skews a few off the side and here we go, defending short fields and such. But one thing, and Jared will love this too, because, while I'm not a big Parra fan and it's got a lot to do with, some of the players and such.
Is there anyone?
I don't think we can get as bad a game from Gutho again this week as we got last week. And that's unfortunate because he's a good club player, right? And I can't see him playing anywhere near as bad as last week.
I'm gonna give you a big cuddle when I see you next for this pod.
You could blend Whiten and Fogarty, that's what Canberra would need. Whiten's experience with Fogarty's game.
Last week, Moses, while his every other part of his game wasn't overly great, his kicking game was on point.
It was.
It was on point. Yeah,
his kicking game was
even
amazing.
Even before Moses went out, Gutho's throwing stupid, Harbour Bridge forward passes and stuff like that. He usually makes the right decision 80% of the time, and shit, I think he didn't get one right.
80% of the time, all the
time. It works every time.
no, what I was going to say is that, so last week, Mitchell Moses' kicking game was amazing. It was really good, put a lot of pressure on Penrith. But on the other hand, Cleary, and I'm not even going to talk about the bombs when he kept bombing Wonga Blake. Like, Cleary's kicking game was better than Mitchell Moses in his deft kicks, his long kicks, his positional kicks, his kicks across. It was all better.
Yeah.
Which Moses wasn't ready for, because he's usually the best kicker on the field. So for that reason, Fogarty needs to replicate Cleary, because while Moses was kicking to keep Parramatta in the game, that was the only thing that kept Parra in. Cleary was probably a shade under, I'll give you, but he was kicking just as good, or to the same level as Mitch Moses, which held off Parramatta's surge. Because if that was against another halfback, say Adam Clune or Dowie Cherry Evans, who can't kick for shit, wait for it, Penrith wouldn't have lasted, in other words. But the only thing that kept them in was Nathan Cleary's kicking game, which was So Jamal Fogarty's kicking game, while Jack Wine is a distance kicker, Jamal Fogarty is definitely the attacking kicker, or the positional kicking. So he needs to replicate Nathan Cleary and kick Parra out of the game and kick to the same level that Moses does.
I tell you what, I'm excited for. And I mean, we saw glimpses of him last week. But Xavier Savage, how's he going to handle the big, big spot? Another weekend progressing in a key position.
He'll do better than Moses. I mean, the Guffo.
He's hoping, yeah.
The only thing on that kicking point you brought up, Jared, all of that occurred in the first 60 minutes. And I probably should have stipulated timing. I was more talking about it would literally be the last 20 minutes once the team's in front. I agree with Cleary, obviously, is another league compared to all these other guys with regards to icing the game. And I agree, Moses' kicking game is brilliant. But generally, the calling card of his kicking game is to gain meters in order to set up attack or to he's an attacking kicker as opposed to a controlling one. That's the time of the game that I'm interested in. I hope none of them do it, because it just means they're going to continue to attack till the end. So I think we're all going Parramatta. Hinging on Moses playing for Ben and I. But Ben's, I think we all message
through. Oh, boys, Canberra, I'm supporting one Canberra here.
Now, the second game, so Saturday night, 8 p.m. Great family-friendly starting time there of 8 p.m. So make sure you get your kids down there so you get home nice and early.
Poor little Ali can't watch this game.
Bloody idiot, seriously. Anyway.
How good would it have been played at 5:30 in the afternoon? How good would that have been?
Yeah, especially down right on the beach where it's not even going to be cold, I swear, at 8 o'clock at night. Anyway, Craig Fitzgibbon's Sharks versus Jason Demetriou's Rabbitohs, both first year NRL coaches, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Time. Wow. Not a game I expected anyway to see in the finals. If anyone didn't know, NRL actually did a finals bracket this year, American style. Mine lasted one game, but I definitely didn't have this matchup anywhere in it. This could be a freaking cracker if both teams played as they did. Well, if Sharks played as they did last week and Rabbitohs played as they did last week, Sharks will belt them. But if they both bring their top games, this is going to be, or could be, has the potential to be, an absolute ripper of a contest. I'm going Sharks straight up just because of their performance last week. I said it then, they would have beaten any other team that week except for the Cowboys. I don't think they have to do anything differently. I don't think Rabbitohs have the attack across the park to unlock them like the Cowboys did last week, with Sharks being the third best defensive team of the season. Luttrell's just got a Luttrell, and Walker's got a score or set up anytime he gets an opportunity and can't afford to miss any, I think, for Rabbitohs to win, especially without Burgess there and the impact he's been bringing off the bench this season. Disagree with everything.
I was not... everyone's pumping up because South Sydney won last week about how, you know, how good Latrell and Cody were playing, how good their behaviour was. I don't agree with that, and I hope Cronulla beat them hands down for that reason.
Oh, Jared agreed with me.
I am so off South Sydney, their holier than now attitude right now, that fuck them.
Analysis.
No, but on the other hand, I'm really liking Lachlan Elias' play. Like, he's really grown into that role. He stepped in probably the hardest boots in 2022, and he's done an amazing job. And a thing that's very underrated, that's not talked about, because there's a lot of boys in that South Sydney team who get a lot more coverage, is Lachlan Elias was going up against Angus Crichton. He missed him once, but he's going up against Nat Butcher, Egan Butcher, and the entire fucking Roosters pack last week. And he put each of them on their back in a very strong defensive display. Mm. And I think a lot of teams are looking at that going, shit, we're not going to, you know, that's ruled them out of making him a target moving forward because he's strong defensively.
We got two and first year
this halfbacks. Week he'll have hit this week he'll have probably the least hardest second rower as far as tackling ability to tackle in the competition in Wade Graham.
Yeah. On
the other side, I would have liked to see, like, it would have been a good battle to see Elias as Britton Nakora, but unfortunately they both play on the right hand side for their respective teams. For Cronulla to win, Nicho Hynes. If Cronulla go on to win the grand final, Nicho Hynes has to play, including last week, four of the best games of his life. Because without him, I know, but without him, their attack just doesn't have that polish. He just has that eliteness about him. One of the few players who left Melbourne and went on to thrive. For South Sydney, it's just the same people. If Cody Walker just and Alex Johnson, if he just passes to Alex Johnson all game, bye bye Cronulla. Like, that's literally what it is. Like, and
yeah. It's not necessarily in Cronulla's DNA, I guess, with, you know, some aggressive line speed and such, that they handle themselves offensively pretty well, but, you know, in a different kind of way. Whereas if you look back what the Roosters did 2 weeks ago, they shut down everything on, you know, South's formidable left side, right? Like, AJ got no ball, and when he did, he was just smothered. So, I mean, obviously, things changed last week when players were out of position and all this sort of stuff. So, the shuffle that South Sydney needed kind of happened, you know, just the way all those events transpired. Whereas this week, I don't know, can you see Fitz going, identifying a bit of that and being like, well, you know, like, we limit and contain this side of their game plan, it's going to go a long way to us winning this game and maybe not necessarily having to score 30-plus to get there. Because this Sharks team, they're, you know, we spoke about grinding before. They've long been a grinding squad, right? Like, they can take it with Melbourne, they can take it with the Roosters, or, you know, any of those tough physical battles you've expected over the years. Mm-hmm. That's how the Sharks win. Only this year it seems, you know, with the inclusion of Hynes and stuff, that they've got this high octane attack now. But yeah, they're built for that. South Sydney, I mean, they've got players who can grind, but I just don't know if that's their DNA.
Yeah. So, the key, it's funny you mentioned the 2 weeks ago. So a key to any good defensive team, Melbourne Roosters, strong teams in the last 15, 20 years, is a very good defense-orientated fullback who not necessarily great at actually tackling someone, but actually organising.
Yeah. Do you think Will Kennedy is obviously not Tedesco level, but that's not the strength of his game?
Yeah, and so that's the point I was going to make. There's two things on this one. Will Kennedy has to be very smart in watching game tape all week about what they do. And on that right-hand side against South Sydney's strongest left-hand side at full strength, Latrell Mitchell, Campbell Graham, AJ, the centre opposing is Talakai. So he's the slowest centre. He is not there to defend. He is there to run over people. So for that reason...
Isn't Johnson on the left?
Yeah, Johnson. Alex Johnson's on the left. Talakai's on the right.
Yeah, I think they said Campbell Graham to AJ.
Or who, is it Isaiah Tass? Oh, sorry, Isaiah Tass.
Okay. Isaiah, you had me confused.
Sorry. So yeah. Isaiah Tass, okay. So, you know, John Talakai is definitely not there to defend. So that too, like last game, Cronulla beat them 21-20 the one time they played them this year, but this goes South Sydney on a high. They're at full strength. Cody Walker's just passing the ball on a string. Talakai is going to have a hell of a job. And to be honest, I think South Sydney are licking their lips opposing him because he is not a Joey Manu to come up against.
And Talakai plays on the left.
It's Jesse Ramian.
Oh, sorry. So either way, I don't rate defensive capabilities of both of them.
So Cowboys scored 32 against the Sharks last week. One of those tries was scored on the outside, and that was Murray Tulagi. Peter Hicku's one was freaking brilliant, but it's not an outlier, but Taumalolo set that try up with like a 20 meter cutout ball from like the middle of the field. Yeah. That's not going to happen weekly. Like if you go back and watch the defense against Hicku on that, they're a bit flat footed. And as a coach, I think you can forgive that because you're not really expecting Taumalolo to fling that pass more than once in every 10 crack. And it just gave Hicku that step.
Who have the Rabbits brought in for Burgess?
They have got Hami Salo. Or no, Cheekham would be. Because he came in late last week. Oh, Cody Nikorima's on the bench.
Nicholas and Totola are starting, and Hame Sele, Cheekham, and Havili are on the bench with Nikorima.
Not a solid bench.
Tell you I'd be swapping.
Obviously going to lose. They've lost a lot of size in the forwards with an absence of Burgess and bringing in a Cheekham. But it's you've got to like what Cronulla have in Royce Hunt and obviously. Who else they bring?
Having new LAs on the bench, McInnes and Fifita.
He doesn't start. Is Fifita in there?
Fifita's on the bench. Royce Hunt's the starter.
Yeah. And we don't know what the conditions are going to deliver yet either, do we? If it gets just a little bit dewy, you got to like the slog that Cronulla will be able to dish out.
Yeah, and that's actually really interesting because on their bench, for South Sydney, you got Nikorima, Hame Sela, Michael Cheekham, who's a second rower slash centre. He's not the biggest guy in the world. And Havili.
They got no grunt.
I'd see Arrow shifting to prop for a little bit of that game.
Yeah.
And just bring Cheekham in the second row.
Yeah. They got Havili at 17 who runs on a treadmill every time he runs. But the interesting part is they got Blake Taft, Jackson Puller, Richie Kenner, and Peter Mamazoulas.
They're not going to ring any of them, and they've been the same reserves for like the last.
But my point is, there's no forwards in the back four. Where Cronulla off their bench, you got Teague Wilton, who can play up front. He's a second rower. Cam McInnes, but having new early for Fafita. But then they got Tolman and Colquhoun, who's a second rower.
He's a center.
Is he?
Yeah.
Right. He's a prop. Thank you very much,
Jesse Colquhoun.
Yeah, he's a prop.
Is he really?
Oh. Yes. So the point is, I know a lot of those players won't end up playing, but if there is a late injury to South and if it's a front rower like Hame Sele, there is no props to bring in off that bench, which for me is a massive concern because South's probably trying to outpace Cronulla and that's not necessarily the best idea, to be honest, because Cronulla probably their attack, I would say, off the ball, like running onto the ball, is the quickest in the NRL. They do everything at speed with the ball in their hand. So I'd be very concerned with that tactic.
I know they're putting a lot of faith in their execution of, you know, Walker and Latrell to, you know, make the right decision every time, execute at a high level and keep their head. That's a lot of variables.
You talked about Sharks earlier about being the grinding sort of squad. Just bring up the ladder. So after the 25 rounds, so 24 games, one bye. In the points four column in the top eight, where do you think the Sharks rank? Just in the four column out of the top eight teams.
Oh, I know that by the same token, they've been in some close games this year. That's the thing. Six?
No, they're like eighth.
You both missed by one. They were seventh. The only team that they scored more than were the Raiders. So they scored 573 points. Rabbitohs, surprisingly, were only one spot above them on 604 points. So it's a 31-point difference. So Raiders were the worst, then Sharks, then Rabbits. And I think when most people think of Rabbits, they think of a high-scoring team. So they scored less points.
They were ordinary early, though, remember?
They were ordinary early.
They lost to the Broncos twice by decent margins.
That is ordinary.
What about in the against column?
They scored close to that.
I literally said it earlier. That was the
top three.
Literally by 3 points. So they scored 31 points less than the Rabbits, but Rabbits led in 110 points more than the Sharks did, hence the points differential of 209 to 130. So we say that they grind out the points scored over the whole season. If you break it down 31 into, say, 24, it's like, what, a couple of points extra per game. So Sharks can grind the hell out of them if they need to, but they can also score with them more or less when they need to as well. So I think, and they've also got a 10-2 home record. Like, everything in here is pointing towards a Shark victory. Outside of the X factor, except that is
also except for the fact that
how still much have they got in the tank as well, right? Like,
it was a big game last week.
They've literally got the 7 days, right? They played Saturday, they're playing Saturday again.
Both teams are coming off emotional games for different reasons.
I think
Souths have one less day, but
Cronulla came in. I can't remember who it was. One of the commentators was like, the team who wins this is going to be so thankful they're going to have a week off because they're physically and emotionally just cooked.
Yeah.
Like, not those words, but yeah.
And the winner of this will versus Penrith, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, on the other side, it'll be the winner will take on the Cowboys. So I think it sounds as though we're all three of us are going the home teams in both games. With an asterisk there on the Moses there for the first game. And so that means Rabbitohs and Raiders are going to win. So if you've come here to get tips, remember I was 0 for 4 last week. Ben was 2 for 4 and Jared was...
I didn't do it.
0 for 4 as well. Actually, negative picks, 1. So you get the lowest score, minus 1. So
Nick's picks this week, he's got $20 on Cody Walker and Dylan Brown anytime try scorer with a potential return at $232.54.
That'd take him over a grand.
How much money do I have left?
You have $60, mate.
Oh, here we go. Are you ready for a $60 bet?
Oh, God. I'm shaking in anticipation.
No, I'm only going to do $30 bet. And I'll do, yeah,
we'll see. All right, let's go. What do we got?
Newcastle aren't playing, Jared. Are you sure?
They are in the women's. Calm down.
Oh, I love it. Can you bet on Hudson Young not to score a try? Jeez, they've got Cronulla Sharks as outsiders.
Hey, Dollar, who does?
Sports, the Blue and Yellow Company have Cronulla Sharks at $1.95, Rabbitohs at $1.85.
Well, that shit up recently.
Is there an injury that we don't know about?
Maybe, because I looked at just the tipping, you know, obviously they're not the same odds, but they're pretty close. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, $2.50 for Rabbits, maybe $1.85 or something like that.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Play.
I got my bet.
All right.
So it's going at $30. I've got Cronulla to win, Ronaldo anytime try scorer, Alex Johnson anytime try scorer.
Yeah.
Mike Acebo, anytime try scorer, Bankwest.
Yeah.
And Jack Whiten, anytime try scorer.
Oh, yeah. All
$30. Right. At $30, I'll win $900. I'll fucking destroy you all. You wait.
$30 at $30. Freaking.
I like that, Jared. That's
Not bad.
Not as dark horse as Wells there, that's for sure.
All right. Well, mine's not as outlandish as yours, but
I hope you wrote that down because I didn't save that.
Yeah, I got it here. I'm going to go. So I've got a three-leg multi. I'm going Sharks to win 13 plus.
Jesus.
What?
13 plus.
Yeah. Into Nicho Hynes to stand up and score a try. He's paying $4.20, just by the way, in the meantime.
He didn't score last week, did he?
No.
Instead of a three tries.
And then
unofficially two more.
And then into Alex Johnson to score. So that's paying $24. So
not ballsy enough. If you do it over 30, I ought to respect
Shark, you. Shark 13 plus, Hynes anytime, Alex Johnson anytime at $1.50. And I've got $204 to play with. So if I go... Oh, what's going to put me? What do you got? 200 and what's yours going to pay out? $900 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'll go. Bring it. I'll put $54 on. So if I lose that, that'll take me down to 150. And that's a payout of $1,296.
We're on.
Oh, yeah.
If I win, and then next week I'll try what I do, I'm going to throw everything I have on the grand final. I'm going to put a bet down. So if I, whatever I win in the next 2 weeks, I'll throw the entire kitty on a grand final bet.
Boom. It's on.
And if I don't win, there goes that whole story.
If I don't win, I got $150 left. You got 30. Done. And then Wal's going to still sit there at $847. All right. Thank you, Benny. Thank you,
Hop Nation.
Congratulations, Ben Liner. Ben's the name of the day. This episode is aptly named Hop To It, both for the Hop Nation and the outside chance of a Rabbitohs victory. Oh, actually, no, sorry, favourite chance by the look of this company.
Gallen defeated Hodges.
Again, rugby league show. Yeah, that's it from me. Anything from you boys before we wrap that one up?
Thanks for having us, guys. It's been a privilege to finally get on. You know, listen to pretty much every second of your head at this point.
It'll be a very accurate statement to say Ben's our most loyal listener.
Just say, you got us through COVID, mate. You know, power to you. Just a reminder to keep for listeners to keep their eyes on the Six Again socials for that content update of what you're playing for in the Hop Nation Six Again footy tipping comp. We've still got the two, at least two prizes for Hop Nation as part of that. And as Adam mentioned too, third place is getting some Six Again merch as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that and tip wisely and take home the goods.
Where could punters pick up some Hop Nation goodies if they want to try the range?
In Gympie.
I'd love to stay in Charlie's Hotel, Jared.
Charlie, I'll go there all the time. Great pub.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a barren wasteland on the sunny coast for us of late. But all good independent bottle shops and bars if you know you'd like to go out and have a pint. If you're just chasing some of our regular staples, we are arranged in Dan Murphy's first choice nationally for at least our Jedi Juice New England IPA Pale Ale, Chop IPA. So, no shortage of options, but I would heavily encourage to support the independents. And if they don't have it, ask them for it.
Oh, I like that. Remember, drink craft, not crap.
Dippy and hit, start hassling people.
All right. See you guys.
See you guys.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.